Becky, my wife, remembered a time, this may be familiar to some of you, when our children got to the age where they found it difficult to sleep as long as we thought was reasonable on Christmas morning. Anybody else had that experience, either as a child, that sort of thing? So one year, I think Jonathan, our eldest, was about six, so the others would have been about four, two, and, well, maybe not there. And we decided it would be a brilliant idea to put an alarm clock on the landing between all our bedrooms. And we said to Jonathan and we said to Rebecca, when the alarm clock goes, it will be 6 o'clock, and then you can come and wake us up. Sorted. Wonderful. Perfect night's sleep beckoned. 3 a.m., Jonty woke me, pulling my shoulder in bed and whispering, "Dad, Dad, I think there's something wrong with the alarm clock." Never underestimate a child's ingenuity at times like that. Well, I guess it's reasonable to expect that every single one of us has made a journey to be here this evening. Every single one of us. Some of us will have come a short distance. Some of you will have walked. Some of you will have driven. But some actually will be on much longer journeys. And some of our church family members are not here because they have already undertaken journeys or are preparing for them. So just as a matter of interest, I mean, I can't see very well, so you're quite safe, but put up a hand if you've journeyed to Bristol for Christmas. Wonderful. That was a very wise choice, if I may say so. And others, as I say, have made the choice to journey elsewhere. And it seems to me that one of the things about Christmas is that we journey for a particular reason. During the year, we journey for all sorts of things. We go to see places, we journey on business, we journey to buy things. But at Christmas, we journey to be with those we love. We journey to be with those we're for, those we love to spend time with, those we think well of, those we love to celebrate their successes, and where necessary, sit with them and share their tears. We journey to be with and to be for people we want to thrive, and we journey to be with them because they want to be with us, and they are for us. So there's something very special about Christmas journeys. And some of you will be making Christmas journeys tomorrow. And we pray safety and good travel and good arrival for you. The Christmas stories, they really just occur in Matthew and Luke, two of the writers who wrote about the life of Jesus. And those Christmas stories are full of journeys. They begin with journeys made by angels. Now, I don't believe, to the best of my knowledge, I've ever seen an angel unless he or she were heavily disguised, and that's possible. But we learn that these angels come to visit significant characters, Zechariah and Mary and Joseph. But there are many other journeys that happen within those Christmas stories. Mary, having heard her news, makes a journey to her cousin Elizabeth. Mary and Joseph make their journey to Bethlehem, apparently dictated by political events. An emperor wants to count all his subjects, no doubt. It will have something to do with tax, it nearly always does. There are other journeys. We've read about the journey of the shepherds from their hillsides into Bethlehem. Much later in the story, although it's compressed as Matthew tells it, these strange characters from the east. Scholars often think they might have been people who were exiled from Jerusalem to Babylon centuries before, who never went home. And yet they kept their faith, they kept the ancient texts, they kept watch for the Messiah, the one they were longing for. Whoever they were, they come from the east, a great distance. There's even within the story of Christmas a false journey. That's the journey of Herod, who pretends he wants to journey to worship, but actually wants to journey to do away with a possible rival. And when we think of our own internal landscapes, there are all sorts of journeys going on in each of us. We may be conscious of some of them. Some of them may be even invisible to us, even as we sit here this evening. But at various points in life, and you may be in one of these places right where you sit now, we are journeying towards something, or we're journeying away from something. Our journeys may be deeply real. They may even, like Herod, be false. the most extraordinary journey recounted in the Christmas story. And the reason we're here tonight, we would not gather because an angel visited an obscure carpenter. We wouldn't be here because shepherds left their sheep and journeyed into Bethlehem. We would not be here because of Herod. We're here because of the most extraordinary journey, which, if the Christmas stories are true, is the journey of the Son of God from the courts of heaven to the depths of human existence, to be incarnate, literally enfleshed, to be made human, one of us. His journey earns him the name Emmanuel, God with us. And as we believe here as a church family in Christchurch, not just God with us, but God for us. And actually, if you take just a few steps deeper into Luke or Matthew, Mark or John, if you tiptoe even beyond the Christmas narratives, you meet this God-man. Not a mixture, but the Bible tells us both fully human and fully divine. And yes, our minds can't comprehend it, but that's what the Bible presents us. This one perfect human, the only one to date who has ever lived. If there are candidates for that second post, have a word with me at the end. It's probably not a great sin on your part. It's almost certainly just a mistake. But Jesus gains the name Emmanuel, God with us, God for us. As a church, we believe that his coming answers the three great questions that all human minds face. They're questions of origin, purpose, and destiny. Where did I come from? How should I live while I'm here? And what will happen to me when I'm no longer here? Those are the three great questions. Philosophers, poets, artists pose them and answer them in all sorts of different ways. But those questions are ultimately irreducible. Origin, purpose, destiny. And all of us, in some way or other, are engaged on a journey into those questions, seeking answers. And as a church, we believe that as we look at the whole scope of Jesus' life, we begin to get glimpses of the answers to those questions. We start tonight, Christmas. It's the most wonderful time. I hope you, like me, love Christmas. But it's just the beginning. And we think, even though we can't comprehend it, of the God whose praises we sing. The world's been singing his praises for well over 2,000 years. But that God being laid in wood as a baby. The cross pieces of that wood fashioned into a trough to feed animals. Fast forward 30-something years, and that same God, now no longer a baby, but a fully grown human man, is laid not in wood, but on wood. And it's not just the cross pieces that are nailed together, but he himself is nailed to wood. And there God fashions a place to feed every hungry heart and every thirsty soul. The Christmas story, and as it continues into the adult life of Jesus, as we see him meet individual after individual, virtually every expression of humankind, those who are deeply in the established order and those who understand themselves to be on the edges, the elderly and the young, the children, the rich, the poor, the male, the female, those who shared the faith of Jesus and those who pursued other faiths, those who were walking on his journey and those who were pursuing their own journey. Jesus demonstrated time and time again that he was prepared to be with, and he already was for every one of them. And as a church, we believe that Jesus speaks ultimate truth over every life. That actually it's not so much what you think about yourself that counts as what he thinks of you. It's not so much the words you speak about yourself or the words that have been spoken about you by others that count as what he speaks over you. It's not so much who or what is for you, but that he is for you. In fact, were the whole world against you and he alone for you, he would swing the balance eternally in your favor every time. We believe that ultimately it is not even the fact of your and my inescapable death, because life offers but one certainty, and it is that it ends. But it is not even the inescapable reality of death that will speak the final word over you, but that his journey, firstly to Bethlehem, but later to a hill outside Jerusalem, his journey took him through death. Every human life's journey has ended in death, but we believe that his journey did not end there. That in fact he took on death at its own game and beat it hands down. And that gives him the right to speak different words over you than have possibly ever been spoken before. Words not of condemnation, but of acceptance. Words not of rejection, but of welcome. That is the Jesus whose story begins here this evening. And each of us needs to make a decision as to how we journey and whether we journey to his welcome or away from it. I'll always remember one of the earliest journeys I can remember as a child is back to London, where I was born. My parents moved when I was 6 weeks old. By the time I found them, they were living in the Lakes, Lake District, which was wonderful. And we used to go back to London to visit grandparents. And I remember being terrified by the tube, that hot breath that came out of the tunnel. I was sure it was some monster. And then that creaking, rattling train coming out. And then on certain lines, the Bakerloo in particular, that voice that says, "Mind the gap." To a small boy, that was terrifying. I was sure this gap was going to swallow me. But I actually had to trust my parents, make this journey, the short step from platform to train. And it may be that some of you are on a platform waiting for a train of faith. Somebody like me can't take you onto the train. Nobody can do that. I can perhaps narrow the gap somewhat. But ultimately, like I did as a small boy, I had to put my hand in the hand of my parents and step on. And God holds out his hand to all who will take it. We believe as a church that God, Emmanuel, is not just with us, but for us. Not just for us, but for everyone. And if I can borrow an old phrase, God is for life, not just for Christmas. Hymn writers and carol writers, like poets and artists down the ages, having discovered within the God who is Emmanuel, with us and for us, their own ways of expressing their response, of beginning their journey. And in a few moments, we're going to sing another carol whose writer penned these words as the final line. Most of you will be very familiar with them. "What can I give him, poor as I am? If I were a shepherd, I would bring a lamb. If I were a wise man, I would do my part. Yet what I can, I give him, give my heart." We're just going to pause for a very short period in the stillness now. And it may be that you just want to say something to God, whether you believe in him or not at the moment, but you may just want to say something to him about the journey you find yourself on. You may want to think in your own heart and mind, what do you bring to give? For as you come forward in a few minutes' time to receive bread and wine, you receive in your hands his broken body, his poured out blood, that speaks an eternal word of hope for every life and a sure destination for every journey that we could undertake. So let's be still and reflect together before we sing again. Jesus, we thank you that you offer to be with us on life's journey. You promise to be for us. You're still there even when we take wrong turnings, when we follow dead ends, when we end up in cul-de-sacs, when we're heading the wrong way. You come with us wherever we go and are always waiting to lead us afresh to our eternal home with you. Through the work of your Spirit in our hearts and minds tonight, may this evening be a significant staging post on our journey with you. And we ask it, Jesus, in your name, the name that is Emmanuel, God with us. Amen.